The Honorable, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court.
Justice Barrett has the opinion this morning, case 22-1074, Sheets versus County of El Dorado.
George Sheets and his wife applied for a permit to build a modest prefabricated home on their rural property with plans to raise their grandson there. But before the County of El Dorado would issue the building permit, it demanded that Sheets pay a substantial fee to mitigate local traffic congestion. Sheets challenged the fee in California State Court as an unlawful exaction of money in violation of the Fifth Amendment's Takings Clause. His challenge relied on this court's decisions in Nolan versus California Coastal Commission and Dolan versus City of Tigard. In those cases, we held that permit conditions must have an essential nexus to the government's land use interest, and the costs of complying with the condition must be roughly proportional to the harms that will flow from the proposed development. Sheets argued that the county's demand for the traffic fee failed the Nolan-Dolan test because the fee amount was determined by a generic rate schedule rather than an individualized assessment of how Sheets' modest new home might affect local traffic. But the lower courts declined to assess the fee under Nolan and Dolan's nexus and rough proportionality test. In their view, and deepening a split among other courts to consider this issue, the county's traffic fee need not satisfy Nolan and Dolan because the permit condition was imposed by the legislature and not on an ad hoc basis by an administrative agency. The California court was wrong. Nothing in the Constitution's text, history, or this court's precedent supports treating legislative and administrative permit conditions differently for purposes of the Takings Clause. Start with the text. Neither the Fifth Amendment, which contains the Takings Clause, nor the 14th Amendment, which incorporates the Takings Clause against the states, distinguishes among the different branches of government. As far as the constitutional text is concerned, legislative and administrative permit conditions stand on equal footing. History points the same way. In fact, special deference for legislative takings would have made little sense historically, because legislation was the typical way that governments exercised their eminent domain power. Before, during, and after the founding, legislatures passed laws to acquire private land for a variety of public uses, and they always provided just compensation to the landowners. The Takings Clause enshrines that longstanding practice. This court's precedent seals the deal. In both our per se and regulatory takings cases, we have subjected legislative and administrative action to the same constitutional rules. So, too, for the many circumstances in which we have applied the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. There is no reason to treat the Nolan-Dolan test any differently. This case contains many issues that we don't decide, including whether a permit condition imposed on a class of properties must be tailored with the same degree of specificity as one that targets a particular development. The California court did not consider this issue or several others because it proceeded from the erroneous premise that legislatively imposed permit conditions are categorically exempt from the rules of Nolan and Dolan. We leave the unaddressed issues for the lower courts to consider in the first instance. We vacate the judgment below and remand the case for further proceedings not inconsistent with this opinion. Our opinion is unanimous. Justice Sotomayor has filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Jackson has joined. Justice Gorsuch has filed a concurring opinion. And Justice Kavanaugh has filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Kagan and Justice Jackson have joined.
Justice Sotomayor has the opinion this morning in case 22-1165, Macquarie Infrastructure Corporation versus Moab Partners.
Securities and Exchange Commission Rule 10b-5b makes it unlawful to omit material facts in connection with buying or selling securities when that omission renders statements made misleading. Separately, Item 303 of SEC Regulation S-K requires companies to disclose certain information in filings with the SEC. The question in this case is whether the failure to disclose information required by Item 303 can support a private action under 10b-5b, even if the failure does not render any statements made misleading. The court holds that it cannot. Pure omissions are not actionable under Rule 10b-5b. Respondents alleges that petitioner had a duty to disclose a particular known thread or uncertainty under Item 303. Because petitioner allegedly violated its duty to disclose under Item 303, respondent brought an action under Section 10b and Rule 10b-5. The district court dismissed the suit, but the Second Circuit reversed. The Second Circuit concluded in part that petitioner's alleged Item 303 violation alone could sustain respondents 10b and Rule 10b-5 claims. This court granted certiorari to resolve disagreement among the circuits on whether a failure to make a disclosure required by Item 303 can, standing alone, support a private claim under 10b-5b, even in the absence of an otherwise misleading statement. Rule 10b-5b makes it unlawful to omit to state a material fact necessary in order to make the statements made in the light of the circumstances under which they were made, not misleading. Logically and by its plain text, Rule 10b-5b does not proscribe pure omissions, which occur when a speaker says nothing in circumstances that do not give any special significance to that silence. The rule requires identifying affirmative assertions, that is, statements made, before determining if other facts are needed to make those statements not misleading. Statutory context confirms this reading of Rule 10b-5b. Congress knew how to impose liability for pure omissions, as it did in Section 11A of the Securities Act of 1933, which prohibits registration statements that, quote, omit to state a material fact required to be stated therein, close quote. Neither Congress in Section 10b nor the SEC in Rule 10b-5b mirrored Section 11A to create liability for pure omissions. Today, the court confirms that the failure to disclose information required by Item 303 can support a Rule 10b-5b claim only if the omission renders affirmative statements made misleading. For these and other reasons set forth in the opinion, the court vacates and remands for further proceedings consistent with its opinion. The decision of the court is unanimous.
I have the opinion this morning in case 2351, Bissonnette versus LePage Bakeries, CK Sales, and Flowers Foods. Flowers Foods is the second largest producer and marketer of bakery foods in the United States. It makes Wonder Bread, tortillas, bagels, butterscotch crimpets, and jumbo honey buns in more than 40 bakeries in 19 states and markets its products throughout the country. Neil Bissonnette and Tyler Wojnarowski are franchisees who own the rights to distribute Flowers products in certain parts of Connecticut. Flowers would bake the bread and buns and send them to a warehouse in Waterbury. Bissonnette and Wojnarowski would pick them up and distribute them to local grocery stores and other outlets. Now, to purchase the rights to their territories, Bissonnette and Wojnarowski signed distributor agreements with Flowers. Those contracts required that any claim, dispute, or controversy between the parties had to be arbitrated under the Federal Arbitration Act. The relationship between the distributors and Flowers soured, and the distributors sued Flowers. Companies said they couldn't sue but had to arbitrate instead because of the Federal Arbitration Act and their contracts. Bissonnette and Wojnarowski responded that they did not have to arbitrate, pointing to an exemption in the Act. That exemption said that the Act did not apply to seamen, railroad employees, or any other class of workers engaged in foreign or interstate commerce. Now, we had held years ago that the other class of workers covered by the exemption had to be transportation workers, just like the seamen and railroad employees were. Bissonnette and Wojnarowski said they fit the bill because they transported the baked goods from the warehouse to the stores. But the Court of Appeals, whose decision we review today, ruled that that was not enough to trigger the exemption. The workers, it said, also had to work in a transportation industry. And it held that Bissonnette and Wojnarowski worked in the bakery business, not the transportation industry, so they were not covered by the exemption and had to arbitrate. Today, we reverse that decision. Whether the exemption applies depends on what the worker does, not what his or her employer does. So it doesn't matter that Flowers is in the bakery business. What matters is whether Bissonnette and Wojnarowski are transportation workers. Think what would happen if the rule were different. Courts would have to try to figure out how to categorize businesses when that might be as easy as it might seem. Is something a transportation business or something else? For example, is a pizza delivery company in the delivery business or the pizza business? What about companies like Amazon or Walmart? They sell their own products, but also deliver products from others. Are they transportation companies or something else? Our reading of the Federal Arbitration Act saves us from having to answer those riddles. The judgment of the Court of Appeals is vacated, and the case is sent back for some further proceedings on other issues. The decision of the court is unanimous. Mr. Clerk, the court will entertain motions for admission to the bar of the court.
A group of attorneys from the Department of the Air Force Judge Advocate General's Corps, presented by Lieutenant General Charles Plummer.
General Plummer.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. Alabama, Major Joseph Jerome Wendell. Arizona, Major John Charles Maddox Law. California, Captain Kate Un Lee, Lieutenant Colonel Craig Michael Ma, Major Kira Joanne Ryan, Colorado, Major Sarah Elizabeth Needham, Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Wallace Ramage White, District of Columbia, Captain Ashley Marie Hartshorn, Florida, Major Keishet Shanae Lemberg, Major Ashley Tuong Phu Nguyen, Major Kevin Zachary Timol, Georgia, Major Frederick James Johnson, Captain Michael Anthony Rivera, Captain Tyler Logan Washburn, Illinois, Major Douglas Kenneth Bryson, Captain Robert Frederick Ritchie, Major Jillian Nicole Sloan, Captain Jessica Elizabeth Vassell, Indiana, Major Craig Matthew Brunson, Massachusetts, Major Vanessa Barros, Maryland, Major Crystal Antoinique Grinnell, Major Shay Landry Hoxie, Minnesota, Major Joseph Michael Coppola, Missouri, Captain Nicole Christian Timrick, Captain Patrick Crawford Tipton, North Carolina, Major Christina Marie Torpy, Captain Tara Tiffany Danielle Truel, New Hampshire, Major Tawny Racine Gulizia, New Jersey, Christopher Adam Hawthorne, Nevada, Major Mara Janelle Erickson, New York, Captain Whitney Alexis Coleman Lopez, Ohio, Colonel James Richard Lisher II, Oklahoma, Major Sean Richard McDivitt, Major Lauren Francis Swanson, Major Matthew Gregory Zellner, Pennsylvania, Captain Ariel Samantha Heald, Puerto Rico, Ada Carolina Picon Arzola, South Carolina, Major Lauren Christine Kirby, Major Stephanie Caroline Morrow, Texas, Major Ashley Nicole Bauer, Virginia, Melissa Danielle Hudgens, Captain Trevor Nicholas Ward, Washington, Major Tarasana Rose Bintliff, Captain Samantha Marie Castanian, Lieutenant Colonel David William Cromwell, Wisconsin, Major Curtis Jason Hinka. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the Department of Justice Association of Black Attorneys, presented by Rahima Abdulhaleem.
Mr. Abdulhaleem, Ms. Abdulhaleem.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. From the District of Columbia, Michelle Jones Coles, Willistine Tarsha Harris, Patricia Lynn Petty, Vanessa Ingrid Reed, Roberta Oluwashun Roberts, Courtney Rianne Robinson, Sharion Trinnell Scott. From the state of Florida, Natasha Denise Hines, Jamaica Marie Littles. From the state of Georgia, Judge Davina Deshaun Walker. From the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Minyard Culpepper Jr. From the state of Maryland, Jeffrey Kyle Sands, Natasha Rachel Williams. From the state of New Mexico, Evan Nicole Wesley. From the state of New York, Charles Wesley Hart Jr. From the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Angela Nicole Middleton. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the University of Dayton School of Law, presented by Becky Bowright McLennan.
Ms. McLennan.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. District of Columbia, Sabra Lynn Tome. Illinois, Stacy James Brown. Kentucky, Marissa Carol Coppler. New York, Rabia Gull, Caroline Beauregard Schenkel. Ohio, Stephanie Michelle Allen, Amy Elizabeth Bailey, Bradley Scott Baldwin, Karen Denise Bradley, Sam Grayson Brinker, Ashley Nicole Caldwell, David John Caldwell, Timothy Allen Campbell, Michael Thomas Columbus, Erica Catherine Curran, Ryan Joseph DeAngelis, Mark Edward Landers, Lanice Darcel Lane, John Matthias Lentz, Jack Ellen Polk, Lisa Ann Sandner, Thomas Russell Schiff, Michelle Marie Thompson, and from Virginia, Catherine Adair Tatum. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted. If all the applicants will stand, the clerk will administer the oath.
But before he does so, I would like to extend to each of you a warm welcome as a member of the Bar of the Court and an officer of the Court.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear that as an attorney and as a counselor of this court, you will conduct yourself uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States, so help you God?
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.